Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Mix Show. Yep, we're back another week. Another week has passed, another crazy week of technology, of course. And I am your interim host, stepping in for Jeff Gamet, who is out on a last-minute job. Like, he got some work, which is great. By the way, I wanted to mention, if you're looking for a really, really good, like, developer relations person, or like someone who can teach technical things in webinars, prepare technical content, stuff like that. He's a really good writer as well. Has years of experience at the Mac Observer, the Big Show, the Mac Show, tons of other places. Jeff is available, so grab him while you can. He's looking. With me, I have, well, one person who's retired and one person who's not. If you've listened to this live, then you know why I mentioned that. And let's start with Tom. How are you doing? Welcome back.
Thank you. I'm doing fine. I enjoy listening to the discussions about work and how much I don't miss all that stuff.
Some of the stuff you're talking about. Yearly employee reviews is what we're talking about. I bet you don't miss those.
I don't miss them at all. Yeah. And I was in China for about 12 days. Mm-hmm. And I finally figured out something. This is not maybe a massive breakthrough. I love Chinese food, except when they prepare meat, they serve the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Like chicken, you get the chicken meat, the chicken skin, the chicken bone, the chicken cartilage, the chicken tendons, and people like
chicken
to eat
brain.
Them. Yeah. But at least brain is kind of a muscle. It's for me, yeah. It's the tendons and cartilage that I have a really hard time with. I don't know how people eat that.
Yeah.
So we had a long discussion about it, and people say, yeah, you know, we just kind of grew up eating this and mm-hmm. like it.
Yeah, I think it's just something if you're used to it. I mean, on one hand, I think it's also a lot of respect for like the animal that you killed, right? You're really using everything,
sure.
Right? But it's also, if you grow up with that, I think it's just normal for you. Yeah, yeah. Tendons, I've right. had it. I'm like, I'm with you.
It's tough to chew. Let's mm-hmm. put it that way. And, yeah. I'm with you, you know, using the whole animal, don't waste anything. But, you know, if you put the animal parts back in the ground, it decomposes and helps.
Exactly.
The other
plants, so there's other ways that you can do that.
Yes. But I do like all the flavors and variety. And, mm-hmm. and the nice thing about the restaurants there, they're all family style. So you only mm-hmm. eat what you like, which is mm-hmm. nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely like that as well. Yeah, sounds like a really great trip.
Yeah, it was fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also a great trip is visiting Ian in the UK. So, Ian, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you very much. I'm back again after another week. What was I doing last week?
My
son was down.
My
biggest kids, my 30-year-old wife, were down to come mm-hmm. and see us for the weekend. We went to a pottery fair.
Ooh.
Never thought I'd find myself saying those words in a sentence.
But did you enjoy it?
Yes, I did.
See?
There's a place near us called the Hepworth Gallery.
Mm-hmm.
Barbara Hepworth, a famous sculptress. Mm-hmm. And so they said, oh, I saw this thing on Instagram. This is so-and-so. Do you fancy going? He said, yeah, go on then, let's go. I had mm-hmm. no preconceptions.
Mm-hmm.
I had a lovely morning walking around looking at all these... We had a lovely morning walking around looking at all these beautiful things people have made. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We all bought some stuff and came home with it. Mm-hmm. And had a nice lunch. What could be better?
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
I saw some Ponzi art that I didn't understand. Because we were in the gallery and there was this room with things involving metalwork and bits of fur. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I walk out with my... I didn't in the room, but I walked and go... Because it was one of those, you know, I just could not make any sense of it.
Yeah, but I mean, maybe you're also not supposed to.
But
it just is. Right? I mean, that's what art is. Like, it's just is.
Yeah, I don't know. I grew up in, as it, I started a council. I'm a council house kid. Mm-hmm. Going to art galleries wasn't a thing we did.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the projects for our American listeners. I grew up in those.
Mm-hmm.
A family of not much money. Going to art galleries wasn't a thing we did. Mm-hmm. I only ever started going to art galleries with my wife,
mm-hmm.
my current wife now, when we've been married now 10 years or so nearly. And so I'm still a stranger in a strange land when I go to these mm-hmm. places and walk mm-hmm. around. It's interesting because I go with an open mind generally.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes
yeah, it's a good start.
That's utter bollocks. That's utter bollocks. What are they on about? And then I walk around things and go, that's bloody amazing. The one thing I
mm-hmm.
adored when I saw it was, what's his name? Grayson Perry,
mm-hmm.
British cross-dressing artist,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
loads of fantastic things. He made a thing called a memory jar.
Mm-hmm.
It's this beautiful thing, and it was basically the story of his mother's sort of Soviet decrepitude into Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
And the stories on the outside. And it just caught my emotions. It really did when I saw it.
Mm-hmm.
And thinking, that's art. That speaks to me, you know, and it's fantastic. And normally the sort of thing that I wouldn't and brilliant, utterly brilliant.
Yeah, but I mean, that's also the thing about art, right? It's like everybody has a different approach and different perspective on it. And I mean, I personally, I prefer people like you who just go in with an open mind and just experience it. And yeah, some things you might like and some things you might not, and some things you might understand and some things you might not, but you keep an open mind versus the people who go in and they think they're artsy-fartsy and like the big snobs and they know everything about art, and then they start critiquing the artists and whatever, and I'm like yeah, you're missing the point. Like, it's supposed to be also fun, right? Like, and not everything might not be up to your standard, but it's still art.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so yeah, that sounds like a really great time.
It was a really great time. I had fun. Mm-hmm. Again, I surprised myself because it wasn't a thing mm-hmm. normally I would find fun, but mm-hmm. genuinely, mm-hmm. it was really good.
Yeah. Sometimes you really, just really have to
good.
Try.
Yeah. So, yeah, absolutely. Made us by a National Art Pass now, so we're because mm-hmm. in town cool. currently is one of that famous Japanese Wave photo mm-hmm. picture
mm-hmm.
that's currently being shown here. So I'm going to go. Nice. We're going to go up and see that. I think over mm-hmm. the weekend, actually.
Yeah.
We might going to try and get Tom to go and see that.
And Tom, you should really see that you get an original Jeff Gamet. Like, his art, like, he's shown me some stuff, is really good.
I like his, love when Jeff does Inktober.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He did a great job with that.
Yeah, agreed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just wanted to mention that because I'm a little bit jealous because it's hard to get an original Jeff Gamet here. But one of these days, I'll manage. Yeah, I've also had a good random week. Not a lot happened, so mostly work, and went to see the Project Hail Mary movie on the weekend. That was fun.
Oh, what'd you think?
I don't want to spoil it. It's like visually beautiful, like really beautiful. Story-wise, they did a really good job. It all makes sense. It's just someone who listens to the book, I was always like, I'm missing this part, or I'm missing that part, or whatever, which I understand because it's like a, I don't know, 15, 20 hour book that they condense down to, what is it, 2 hours, 2.5 hours or something. So of course they cannot show all the things. Instead, they did it in a very smart and very well way. And there were some things I really loved, as said, like some story points where I was like, okay, they did that actually works and that actually makes sense. And I see what they did there. And like I said, visually, I watched it in IMAX. Beautiful. Like, just
I'm tempted, but at the same time, the book, the audio book left such an impact on me. I don't think I want to see the film yet.
My
highlight of last year's reading.
Yes.
And then, but it was the audio book I listened to.
Yeah.
The highlight of anything I listened to or read last year was Project Hail Mary.
Absolutely. It's and one of so my favorite kind books.
Of, at the moment that still lingers until that's probably softened in my memory.
Mm-hmm.
I'll probably not go near it yet.
Yeah,
but the little clips and the bits and the snippets I've read about it, people are saying that there's some bits that would have translated more difficulty with more difficulty, and again compressing down to
Is it, there were some things.
A few shortcuts, which are good.
Yes, they said it was very doing it. I was a little bit disappointed because some of them were my favorite parts of the book, and I was like, damn it. But I also saw why they did it and why it just had to happen that way. So it said at the end, the one little nibble that I had said without spoiling anything is, what's her name? The lady that runs the project on Earth. Eva, something. Strat.
Yeah.
Her badassness does not come through as clearly in the movie as it does in the book.
That was a little bit kind of a thing where you really got the thing that she was the buck stopped with her.
They tried to do it in a smart way, in a subtle way. Here or there, and try to get that across. But I think in book it was simply because they had more time and could tell more stories clearer than it is in the movie. I'm still not sure about Ryan Gosling as like casting choice, but I mean, hey, okay. Some people say he works really well for that character, and I'm like, not sure. But as I said, I had a great time. It was a great movie. It was visually really great. I enjoyed every minute. And for people who have never read the book or listened to the book, they wouldn't even know what was dropped and would have an amazing time. And that's what I've heard from people. Like people that didn't know the book, they're like, oh, this was amazing. So I think it's just, as I said, the knowledge of the book, I usually can separate that, but there were a couple because it's probably one of my top 5 books, and I've listened to it probably twice a year since it came out, and I'm like, I can tell you the story by now, like almost word for word.
But there were some things
I was like, I really wanted to see that. It was more that I wanted to see it. That was more it. It was like, it's so bad that I missed it. No, I really just wanted to see that. Because so far it's been in my head in the audiobook. So
it's lived in my head too much. The storylines and some of the events have lived in my head, and I don't think I want to see them on the screen.
Yeah.
I prefer my image of whatever happened in that film.
That's
to
totally
whatever at the moment. So I think when it's probably a bit in a year or two's time, I'll probably end up seeing it and see what I think of it. But
yeah, I know. I'll buy it when it comes out. So that should tell you something, because I don't buy movies that I watch once and then like, yeah, it was fun, but I don't want it. Like, this is a movie I want to own. So that should tell you something. We should talk about some news stories.
News
stories. And I think Tom, first story, something about ARM taking on Intel.
So everything I'm picking today is UK based in the spirit of BTN. I had like 3 or 4 things, and everything was UK based. How appropriate. So the news is that this week ARM announced that they are launching a CPU chip that you can buy, or that enterprises can buy. You and I probably won't buy them. And as you know, ARM's business for the last almost 40 years, at least 40 years, has been to license the design specs, essentially the design of CPUs, to other companies.
Yeah.
Like Apple and MediaTek and Samsung companies like that. You all know that, right? Everybody has ARM-based designs. What they buy is a license from ARM
to use the architecture
and design and implement it. So now ARM is shipping their own chips, which is
interesting.
One weird, because now they're competing with their customers. and anyway, so that's weird. But they're basically going to be competing. It's a CPU. It's not a GPU or a tensor processor, and then it's a CPU. I think they said it has 136 cores.
So more like a server CPU, probably.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a server CPU.
Yeah,
so
looking
it's
at
using
the ODMs they're talking to, that sounds servery.
Yeah. It's all headed for data centers.
Which I mean, to be fair, is right now basically everything. Consumer right. market almost doesn't matter anymore.
Not so much. It uses the Neoverse core, which is, I think, the latest one, latest production mm-hmm. one anyway. You know, they update the architecture every few years. Neoverse mm-hmm. is the latest one, I think. And yeah, it does mention in sort of a weird way that the chip was helped designed by Meta and also Cerebras, Cloudflare, OpenAI, and a bunch of mm-hmm. others. I don't know what that means, except probably they ran the specs by them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably.
To figure out what they should optimize and not optimize. Yes. And then they also announced partners, which sound like the people that will actually buy the chips for server racks.
Mm-hmm.
And they mentioned Lenovo and Supermicro. Yeah. And the one, you know, the one thing about ARM is, you know, being an IP provider, they have tentacles all over the industry. So they have a lot of partnerships.
Yes.
So they clearly took advantage of this for this announcement.
Yeah.
And so what you have now is you have, you know, in a data center, as you know, you have CPUs, GPUs, and then all kinds of specialty processors and network mm-hmm. chips and all that kind of mm-hmm. stuff. But from a processor point of view, for the CPU, it's really only Intel and AMD. And then you have the hyperscalers making their own ARM-based.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Mostly some CPUs, but also some specialty processors.
Yeah.
So they're that it's really AMD and Intel. So
mm-hmm.
I guess the primary competitors are AMD and Intel, but kind of NVIDIA too, because NVIDIA does products that are really a mix of CPUs and GPUs together.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, for sure. So I mean, especially these days for the all the AI stuff.
Yeah, the Vera Rubin is really a combo GPU mm-hmm. CPU. Mm-hmm. So ARM is now essentially going to compete with one of their biggest customers, NVIDIA.
Mm-hmm.
And now the question becomes, if you're NVIDIA or Apple or somebody, mm-hmm. ARM is now your kind of your competitor. That might make you a little bit nervous.
Not really.
And so the question is, what is their alternative to ARM? And so there are some people, you know, there's this thing called RISC-V that's been around for a few years. It's an open source core.
Yeah.
And I think it's instruction compatible with various versions of ARM processors.
Mm-hmm, it is. Yeah.
So there is some discussion that companies will maybe ramp up their backup plans, not their primary plans, but their backup plans to keep in their back pocket, their backup plans with risk development, just in case things go sideways with ARM.
I'm kind of wondering what the play here is. I mean, on the one hand, you pointed out where the gap in the market is, right? I mean, in the server space these days, which is heavily skewed towards AI, but also in general, a lot of services, all the cloud products and whatever, all the data centers.
Right.
So that's probably 80-90% of the business these days. And there is really, it depends a little bit on what you're looking for or what you're looking at. But I would say you're right. Like, it's mostly Intel or AMD. Actually, more these days, even a little bit more AMD than Intel, because they're simply more efficient. These days, and better power to performance ratios. So especially on the server side, like that flipped a little bit. That's why you see so many AMD based like hyperscaler offerings, because it's just cheaper. There is a place in the market where you could go in and say, let's compete with those two, because there is probably a path for ARM. There is, it's not that nobody is offering ARM for servers, right? There's, I think is a TSMC even themselves or someone, like, they're offering chips for like ARM server chips.
Yeah, like Qualcomm and MediaTek.
Qualcomm,
and
that
Chinese
was the one I was thinking about. Thank you. Yes.
They're building ARM-based CPUs for servers. Yeah.
Yeah, but not.
But
not,
so is Microsoft and.
Yeah, yeah, but not for that. Not like that, basically. I mean, Microsoft is building for themselves mostly. it's not really selling it too much.
I mean, if you're building, Lenovo, Quanta, mm-hmm. and particularly ASRock, mm-hmm. that's aiming at the home hobbyist market as well as the smaller MSPs that build on white box.
Yeah, yeah, and so that could be an interesting market.
There is a
market.
Chance that that's.
Yeah,
because that will be. I'm sure that's.
Yeah.
But the numbers they're talking about are 5 times increase in revenue.
Hmm. Yeah.
Well, so there's a hint. There's a hint behind the motivation for ARM. I don't think ARM is doing that well financially.
Yes.
Believe it or not.
Yeah.
They've gone through some struggles.
Yeah.
You know, it started with the SoftBank acquisition, and then trying to go public, and then NVIDIA made a bid that got rejected. I don't think they're doing that well financially.
Exactly, and I think that is their. I was just about to mention that. Like, I think they're not doing it because they're like, oh, we can compete with those, and we're so much better, and blah blah blah. No, it's simply because they don't see any other option than to do that. Because they're also basically beholden to other companies delivering, right? I mean, the same thing that Apple, for example, had with Intel, like back in the day before they had their own chips, that Microsoft had for the longest time until they also started doing their own chips to some extent, where you're beholden to someone else delivering products. ARM only makes money when someone else ships a shit ton of ARM chips, right? Because that's usually how the license works. Like, you get, for every chip that you sell, you get like a certain amount, right? So like, your revenue is dependent on someone else delivering a product. And I think,
given
your struggles, that is a bad position to be in.
Yeah, I think part of their issue is, over time, you know, with big companies like NVIDIA and Apple, they're experts at negotiating down royalties.
Mm-hmm.
So the royalties that Apple and NVIDIA are paying today are not the same that they were paying 5 years ago.
And also, I mean, negotiating, because they can threaten to do their own thing, right? Like, but I think both companies, and maybe also Microsoft, a couple others, would be capable of coming up with their own designs if they had to. It's usually you don't want to, you don't have to, but they could.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the attractiveness of the RISC-V is it's, I wouldn't say it's any kind of a special groundbreaking design or anything.
No.
I think it's a solid CPU design, but it's ARM instruction set compatible. It's open source.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that the fact that it exists is exactly the thing that those companies can use and say, well, if you don't give us good terms, we're gonna use RISC-V and like do our own.
Right. So I'm sure all those big companies have efforts where they have teams that are looking at RISC-V or something.
100%.
And I'm sure they bring that up every time they negotiate with ARM.
And like, yeah, you have to be cheaper or better than RISC-V, because otherwise, why would we even pay you anything?
Right.
Right. That's usually how this goes. Yeah. And so that is a way to. I mean, one, you can prove your own designs without having to rely on others to do that, and you can also be in a, like, let's say, more comfortable position, because you're like, even if they threaten to leave, you're like, yeah, so what? Like, I can ship my own chips. I'll just shift over there and do that. Right.
Well, so and then for the positive side for ARM, but you know, it's kind of a similar dynamic in the opposite direction. The companies that need to build servers, like Facebook, Google, Microsoft, Amazon, would love to have competition for AMD and Intel.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, so I think it's also good for the market. It's also good for the market. I think. I mean, whether it's successful or not, we'll see. But it is.
Yeah,
it is good to have that. Speaking of Facebook, Ian's story is about Facebook.
It is.
Well, Facebook and...
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. It's one of those stories again.
Yeah.
Game-changing moment for social media, as it says in the headlines. If you've been following along with this story, it's been rumbling on for some time now. Mm-hmm. Essentially, Facebook and indeed Instagram have lost a court case that says basically those are addictive. They are providing medium where they are causing issue. Claim through the left of your body, it's more for depression and suicidal thoughts. This was one particular claimant.
Yeah.
So now, I mean, it's a fantastic result for them.
Yeah.
And both companies intend to appeal, so they're single
action. Yeah, of course.
Responsible, but really?
Yeah.
I mean, I know we've known this. Of course. And we've known this, and we're all aware of doom scrolling, all of the other kind of crap that goes along with it.
Yeah.
But so now court has actually said, no, that seems reasonable.
Yeah. So here's the interesting thing about this. The case is not technically about, it's not technically about like doom scrolling or whatever. Because in the US, those tech companies, they're basically protected from like, which one was that now? It's not Section 230, it's the other one. But basically, the platform is not responsible for how the user uses it and what the people post on it. That one is Section 230, and the other one I forgot.
It's Section 230. That is.
Is exactly it 230? Okay, I thought there was.
Yeah, it says it's in the article. I'm just
okay. So based on that, there would be no case here because they would just say, "Well, I mean, she is responsible." I think it was a her. It's responsible idea. For. No, it says so here. It's responsible for her own actions. But the case they made was really smart because they basically said, well, look, they delivered a faulty product. Right. It's not about what was posted and how it was used, but the product itself is faulty. The product itself is basically broken in a way that it allows that to happen. And they had like internal documents for Meta where Zuckerberg, I think, basically admitted, it's like, yeah, we're basically targeting kids and whatever, and we need to make sure that they're addicted to us because like we have to get them early, right? So stuff like that. So basically their whole case was, well, they built a product that was faulty from the get-go. It's not about the content, it's about really the product that's broken. And the judge or the jury agreed.
Yeah.
Said, we'll see where this ends up. I'm almost certain this will get struck down because it's just how the system is set up in the US. But we'll see. I really love this case. See, I mean, the damages are peanuts, right? $6 million. $6 million from them. Like,
that falls out of the back of Zuckerberg's pocket every day, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, every 5 seconds. But, yes.
Yeah, he's not going to miss that. But once you lose all the techniques, all of the things that keep us engaged and hooked and scrolling and looking at the things that are automatically playing and the algorithms, once those are stripped away, what are we left with?
It's
not going to be, I don't know what it used to be years ago, but is that, I mean, I stepped away from Facebook because I felt I was being, because they were demographically feeding me shite.
Mm-hmm.
As a 50-year-old man, the things that they were, and again, the same with Instagram, although I seem to have tamed that one, but particularly Facebook was feeding me a certain amount of right-wing rhetoric shite I really did not need anymore. So I said, no, I'm fine without it.
Yeah.
And I stepped back, and that was a brilliant move. And it's interesting to look at it,
mm-hmm.
and you see that even, you say we're trying to protect the kids here, but even someone, a grown up like me with all of my experience of worldly wisdom can sit there and go, oh, look, and I keep, and it engages my eyes, and I then therefore I'm feeding the advertisers. And
yeah, but the difference is you're an adult, your mind is like, your personality, your mind, whatever, is to some extent at least settled. At least you can handle what you're seeing a little bit better. You get less influence. You still get influence, but less influence. But for kids, I mean, they're growing up, they're learning. They're everything is still changing, like their bodies and their minds and everything. And at that point, if something comes in and really on a really bad level interferes with it, and that doesn't matter whether it's social media or it's alcohol or tobacco or drugs or you name it, doesn't matter. That is a big problem.
Yeah, I think the point you're making is similar to the argument for banning alcohol and tobacco in kids under a certain age. They haven't lived long enough yet to make a fully informed decision about those things.
Yeah.
But we've talked about 230 protecting the social media or all platforms because, hey, we just reprint the content that our users post.
Yeah.
But we're not editors. We don't do anything. But when you start having recommendation algorithms, isn't yes. that kind of the same as a newspaper yeah. or a television yeah. news show?
That's exactly.
You're picking and choosing what people see.
Yeah. That is exactly the problem. Yeah. I personally, I know there's a lot that's wrong with Section 230. But yeah. personally, I mean, also having shipped like services and platforms, and I mean, we still have comments on our website and whatever. I still think it's the right approach. But that does not mean that you are not responsible for what you're doing with your platform. Like it protects you to some extent because it should, like, because otherwise otherwise you really should shut down. You couldn't do anything. I get that and it makes sense, but it does not protect you from like really intentionally designing things in a way to be harmful. And I think that is the whole case here. And social media is losing that battle so far. I mean, a lot of countries in the world have already either are discussing or have already implemented social media bans for
Australia.
Yeah, Australia, Europe is discussing it right now.
UK we are.
Yeah,
it's news here. Yeah. Again, why it's the BBC news cycle.
Yeah, and there's a reason for that.
We're considering.
Yeah, there's a reason for that, really, right? And that's so I think. I mean the thing is with this, I mean, if this holds up, if this court case, like, I mean, yes, it will get appealed and whatever, and we'll see how far that goes. But if that holds up, the problem is not the individual case, right? The problem is everybody that can show like really harm, and that was the case. I mean, that was the case here. It was not a I think I was harmed case. It was a like really psychological problems that you could trace back with a reasonable degree to social media. That was the whole thing, right? And anybody who can make such a case would win it, right? Yeah. And that is like the risk for TikTok and Snapchat settled out of court because they couldn't afford
to keep going at it.
Yeah, they I think they were smarter because they were like, yeah, we cannot let that go through. But it shows you how certain Google and Meta were that they could basically
get a
pass here. Yes.
So, you know, I was thinking about this. On the one hand, the algorithm is really the problem here.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you know, the algorithm, content... but also some of the tools, right? The infinite scrolling, for example, helps with that, right? That... There's a whole system behind it.
Right. So the way that the application is architected,
yes,
all those elements that mm-hmm. try to maintain engagement.
Yeah.
So what if, and so I know that's a problem for me, just like mm-hmm. Ian was saying, you know, it serves me up crap I don't want. Maybe it's...
Yeah.
For most people, it keeps them engaged. It doesn't keep me engaged.
Mm-hmm.
So what if you had a system where by default, it was like Mastodon? It's just mm-hmm. a timeline.
Yeah.
But they provided tools that allowed you to sort of tweak your algorithm for what you wanted to see. So you would click a button and a control panel would come up and it had 5 knobs on it. Now you set those knobs the way you want it. If you had a system like that, could
I don't
you
think
still
it would
have
be
a case like this?
No, I agree. I don't think it would be better.
I think I don't think it would matter because the whole. I mean, you can control what you see, but the whole system is still rigged in a way that it basically surfaces you content all the time to keep you in it. I mean, that was the whole. Right, that was the whole case of Meta.
Yeah, but you're the one. The problem to me is the company is controlling that algorithm and the knobs. You know,
yes,
to...
but the company is still controlling the infinite scrolling and the parts that make it addictive.
I mean, in the end, you're the product. So what they want is the way to keep you the product and your eyeballs
firmly
connected to whichever platform.
Meta admitted as much in court. I mean, Zuckerberg basically said, hey, like, our business interest is to keep you on the platform as long as possible.
Which, by the way, is no different than television or radio or anything else.
Yeah, No, but I had to. I had to discuss. Sorry, I have to disagree here. I had a discussion about that yesterday on InSpace about exactly this, with Ray. Like we talked about like back in the day. Like I mean, he's a little bit older, I think, a little bit older than you even, Tom. He said like back in the day. I mean, he would rush home because on Saturday, I think it was Saturday, he could watch Sesame Street or whatever. And then he had to wait a week. And there was a hook at the end where it's like, okay, like, oh, something new is going to happen next. And now I have to wait a week. This is not the same thing. Because the difference is, it is not incentivizing you to, it is keeping your interest to come back. But it's not incentivizing you to basically stay in it the entire time and watch the next thing, watch the next thing, watch the next thing.
I totally disagree, Patrice. I think the way television was designed in America anyway, was they wanted kids, as soon as they got home, to turn on the TV and keep it on until dinner time. It wasn't just one show. It wasn't Sesame Street and wait for next week. It was Sesame Street, then Mr. Rogers, then the Flintstones, then the Brady Bunch. Mm-hmm. They wanted you to watch that TV as much as possible because it was all about Nielsen ratings and the demographic the advertisers were looking for.
Good point.
And it clearly it was nowhere near as effective as, you know, social media type of engagement stickiness, not even close.
Yeah.
But that was their intention.
Yeah. Yeah.
But here, the BBC was mum's babysitter, effectively keeping us busy while she cooked dinner.
Right. Right. Now they use iPads. I mean,
educate and inform and all the usual things the BBC provides. Because there was not, because at least in the case of the BBC, there's no commercial messages. Whereas on the other, if you're watching the other channel, you were getting adverts for Purcell and Purcell and the latest toys and everything else, you know. So
that was always a big uproar, even when I was a little kid in the 60s, was parents complained about how harmful the commercials were on kid shows because they motivated kids to bug their parents to buy the lousy sugary cereals at the grocery store. You know, buy Lucky Charms, you know, and the kids would pester their parents to buy Lucky Charms, which is probably the worst thing you could feed your kids. But that's cartoons were full of ads of all that crap that kids like.
I was going to ask that. Were there segments in the show? I mean, I've seen some stuff for adults, but were there sections in the kids shows as well where they would, and now this week's sponsor, I mean, you know, TV, those kind of serials came about because they were selling soap, weren't they, in the end? Opera, of course.
But some of the shows had sponsors if they were sort of the live kind of show. But mostly it was just the commercials, you know, in a 30-minute cartoon. In 30-minute cartoon, you had 6 or 7 minutes of commercials. What are you moving around?
Yeah, I don't know what was going on. My camera.
Yeah, camera's doing all kinds of interesting things. Camera's going crazy on you.
Yeah, exactly. I forgot what I wanted to say. Oh, I wanted to move on to the next thing. Sorry. we should definitely talk about one more article that I threw in real quick. I didn't post. So Amazon is thinking about doing another phone, and I brought this. I mean, don't care about the details. I mean, it's an Amazon phone. Like, what is it going to be? After failing on with the Fire Phone, they're apparently trying again. But like, my question is this too late? Right? Who will switch? Who would buy it? Who would switch at this point? Is there a market that they can still find an address, or is that basically gone? I mean, just if they're just bringing out another Android phone or another phone like the ones we have today, is there a market for it?
No, because the advantage to any other competitor that appears, like some of the newer, bigger players like Nothing, for example, or Fairphone, they've got a USP somewhere along the line. Oh, Amazon's USP is access to their marketplace. And also their walled garden of an operating system, which is worse than iOS. which you get kind of like Android Lite on most of those Android tablets. It's Android Lite. You get some of the abilities. It'll be inexpensive and probably it'll do granny, but as a, or maybe not even then, but as a tool, it won't. The kids aren't going to buy it. The kids aren't going to want it. I don't know where the market is for it. I mean, the market for the cheap stuff at the bottom of the end of the market, they're great to buy for your kids to have with a one of those holders that can show videos and things because they can smash it about and it's very inexpensive.
Yeah.
But is it maybe then a starter phone where you can't have too much on it? Maybe there it fits.
Yeah, but there's about a million starter phones already. Like basically every manufacturer on the market is making one way or another. I mean, including Apple.
Yeah, we don't.
Everybody else does and hand down.
We don't think about it, but you can buy. You go online somewhere. You can buy any kind of phone you want with any kind of features for any kind of different price range. You know, from $100 to $2,000.
From probably $5,000 to $5,000.
Yeah, that market doesn't need another phone. Yeah. But I think, like you say, Ian, they don't think they're making a phone. They're making an Amazon, and you know,
access
entry
point
to Amazon device.
That's the reason why they're doing it. So you can get
But that was the fire way too, right?
Yeah, which means, I mean, it will be like, hey, you buy a USB-C cable and you get a free Amazon phone with that or something weird like that, right? Because that's the only way to do it. No, I mean, it doesn't mean that there isn't a path into the market. I mean, it has happened in the past. Like, that's how the iPhone, that's how BlackBerry came in. That's how, like, a lot of other phones came in, like, at some point. Like, it is possible. It's just...
You have to have a unique value proposition. What's the unique value proposition?
Something that is so much better than what everybody else is doing that everybody wants to switch to you. That is the point.
Right.
There is nothing there.
I don't think
Amazon can do it. That's the problem.
The people have spoken with Amazon. How many devices that they tried to sell that are portals to Amazon that people have just totally shit on?
Yeah, including, you know,
the
Kindle.
Echo, the Dot, the Kindle, the TV,
the
previous phone. People don't want that.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, and I mean, Amazon
not very
is
many people anyway.
Amazon is making a shit ton of money already, and I'm like, I don't see. I mean, we'll see what they do and what comes out of it. I don't see why do you want to do that.
I just wonder how internally at Amazon they get to the point where they're like, yep, we're going to do a phone.
Yeah, it's probably someone who thinks like who likes designing hardware and who just wants to do that. It convinced someone that this is a good idea. I don't know.
So here's a question. Which piece of Amazon hardware would you call successful?
Hardware from Amazon. Is that cheap Amazon branded
Kindle
USB cable? I don't know.
Kindle was pretty popular.
Kindle was successful when they didn't
for
need
a while.
Shitify.
Yeah, for
until
a while.
They shitified it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Kindle was good.
Yes.
Echo.
Maybe the early
people got sick of because they didn't work that well. Alexa's not that good.
Mm-mm.
The show was the same thing.
Yeah, I don't see any like. Hardware wise, I don't think they ever figured it out. Even the Kindle, I mean, really,
Kindle
it was just
okay.
It works Kindle, okay, but it's also there's not a lot of competition in that market. The competition is really the tablets and the smartphones, and not other e-readers.
Right. The only decent competitor for e-ink. Because I love e-ink, that's why I have a Kindle.
Yeah,
I like
exactly.
E-ink,
that's
and I
the,
can get
yeah,
libraries.
That's the thing.
Same reason why
get
I have
books from the library through my Kindle.
Yeah.
Is that what is it? The Cobra? Cobra.
Kobo.
The Cobra.
Kobo.
Kobo.
Yes. Kobo. Kobo. It's,
It kind of works. It's a little bit funky.
Yeah, but again, here I don't think the hardware was the success factor. I think the integration with their Kindle bookstore and with the libraries and whatever was their success factor.
Until people
the hardware
got tired
is...
of the Amazon bookstore thing.
Yes, exactly.
When everybody was happy buying books from Amazon, the Kindle was great.
Yeah. You know what's also great? All Technologies. It's a really good company. Good one. It's a really good company. It's a UK company. No certification. It's just a great company. They sponsor our server. They are a environmental monitoring company, I would call it. Construction sites, events, and so on. Like if you're like, especially in the like train industry, but also other industries, they've done. So if you have, I don't know, you're building a tunnel through the Alps, for example, like just to mention something that's happening here, or like just in general, you have some train tracks that are being built somewhere or renewed. Like Vienna is doing that right now. They're preparing to shut down half of the city because they're basically gonna take out one of the main arteries and then replace it completely. So they should hire our technologies because it's a really good company. They have like their Sentry system, multiple awards they've won in the UK for that. Worked on the HS2, also worked on like the Tube in London, for example. I know that some also smaller train companies and so on. And like they have, it's really cool. Like you get like the time lapse, and connected to that you get like environmental sensors like dust, vibration, temperature. There was one more I'm blanking on. Probably the light, something like that. Yeah, basically all connected, all live. You can watch your construction site. You can analyze it later and say, look, like when we did this and this, like this was the noise level. We should optimize the step. You can also look at your process and be like, okay, we can optimize it to be faster if we do it this way, whatever. Like, it's just a really, really good tool. Aside from the fact that you're actually required to have something like that. I've seen it used at concerts, for example, to track like the noise level. I think that was the other one that I didn't mention, noise.
Yeah.
The noise level is also really good. Like you can do that. Like when you have like an outdoor concert or outdoor festival of some sort. So there's many, many use cases. As I said, UK based, but very, very much interested in expanding into the wider world. No matter where, fly you and Anders in, and they will rock your boat, your show. So our technology, awetechnologies.co.uk is their website. Reach out to them. And yeah, we have a really cool website on the server that is sponsored by our technologies, live.britishtechnetwork.com. Wow, that's hard. Is the website. We live stream this show every Thursday, 7 p.m. UK time. We're switching time this weekend, I think, to daylight savings. So yeah. All the show times are for the US at least, or for North American people, are going back. Well, for most of them, are going back to where they were before, except for the few places that are smart enough, or have been smart enough to stop that madness. But so figure out whenever that time is in your time zone. By the way, also Fridays, 4 p.m. UK time, is the Mac show. If you want to learn about what Apple is doing right now and what we think about that. There's a live transcript if you want to see what we talked about instead. There's, for example, all the articles we talk about. There's also the Grayson Perry at the National Portrait Gallery link, the memory jar.
Yeah, that was we talked about the memory jar.
Exactly, that Ian mentioned is also in there. Head over to britishtechnetwork.com/chat. Pick today's date in the calendar, which is March 26, 2026. So many sixes. March 26, 2026. And you can see everything that we talked about in the chat. For example, the cool things. So what do we have as cool things? Who's first? Wow, usually you're on it. There, hi, Tom has one. Usually you're pacing it before we even start. And like, so I was like,
Control C, Control V.
Yeah. So Tom, what's your cool thing? It's something.
My cool thing is sticking with the UK theme is a movie. It's Peaky Blinders, The Immortal Man. And our godfather, Ewan, wrote a very good summary in our Slack room about this movie. And he says it much better than I will. And so I'm coming from the perspective of a guy who loved the series, all seasons of the series. Was looking forward to the movie for a long time. So I had a little bit of that over anticipation, but then realized, you know, this is just one movie and I'm used to, a 6-7 episode season. And kind of like what you described about the Hail Mary, it's hard to cram a full long book into a 2-hour movie. So I would say it was great to see the characters again. The characters are as good as ever. The acting is as good as ever. This sort of whole production is really nice. The camera work, the sets are really just the best. Great lighting, really interesting scenes, good character actors at every level. But the story is, I think Ewan called it flat, and I would agree. It wasn't as sort of sharp or as deep as it was in the series. There weren't as many interesting storylines. It was kind of a simple story that just sort of floated along a little bit. So, and I think on IMDb, it's not scoring tremendously high. What was the rating? It was like a 7 or something, 6.5 or 7. But I think
Which
if
for
you're if
6.7, which for IMDb is already pretty good because usually people are very critical there.
Yeah, IMDb ratings, you have to take with a grain of salt a little bit.
Yes.
But I think if you watch the series, you'll like the movie. And it has some good actors, as always.
Yeah, Rebecca
Couple of
Ferguson.
new.
Just would watch it for her.
She's in it.
Yeah.
Tim Roth is in it. Thomas Hardy is back. He's one of
Oh,
my favorite
nice.
from the series. And of course, Cillian Murphy is good. I
Oh,
have to
yeah.
say character that Rebecca Ferguson plays is not my favorite. It's
That's
not about her
probably
acting,
intention.
it's
That's
about the
probably
character.
intentional, right?
Well, it's not that interesting. I don't think they did a very good job writing her part, in my opinion.
Okay.
But I think she didn't have much to work with.
Yeah, because
I saw
she's a
her.
great actor, so.
Yeah, I liked her a lot in Silo. She was really good in Silo.
Which is coming back soon, by the way.
Is it? I'll look
This
forward to that
month
one.
even, or next month or something, or this year, I don't remember, but it's definitely coming back. There's another season. I don't
Oh,
know if they
good.
have announced the date yet.
So it wasn't horrible. Her part wasn't horrible. It just wasn't, I didn't think it was that great. Considering she's a really good actress. Tim Roth was pretty good, though. I always loved Tim Roth ever since Reservoir Dogs,
This it's it only says this summer, so
Okay, well, that's good.
yeah,
I'll have
summer
to.
this
I
year.
turned off my Apple TV subscription a while ago. I've been waiting for some things to pile up so I can start again. Anyway, Peaky Blinders, The Immortal
Very cool.
Man. I give it 2 thumbs up if you're a Peaky Blinders fan.
Okay, I could now quote this quote Straps, but what has two thumbs and doesn't give a crap? Bob Kelso. No, it sounds really interesting. I might actually watch it. Like I'm not into Peaky Blinders, but as I said, Rebecca Ferguson. That's all I
Well, you
want to
might
say.
like the period, it's sort of early days of World War II. It's that time frame.
Yeah, just which is an
It was
interesting
kind of,
time.
I like the sets with the cars and the buildings and the costumes are always kind of interesting from that era.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh yeah. Get my
Ian,
thumbs
what's
up
your
on
cool
set.
thing?
I've gone for an old school thing in a way these days, a mail client, an actual email client. People don't use these things anymore that much.
No, exactly.
I want I'm kind of wanting I was getting fed up of Outlook and I thought, well, what's free out there? What's out there now these days? I stumbled on this and I've been playing with it the last couple of days and it's excellent. It's a really good offer. It's a really good email client support. It's about every format of vendor of email you can hook into it. It's got good shortcuts. It's got a nice interface. It's well, seems to be well designed. It's cross-platform. That was interesting to me. It's cross-platform. It means on this Linux machine I've got here, I have the client installed. I've got the same one on a Windows VM. I've got the same one sat on a on my laptop in the house, and it all works very nicely. I'm very impressed. The only thing it could do with is synchronizing of accounts. If you log in with one of their accounts, you could carry your accounts, and that would be even better. But otherwise, I'm suitably impressed. It's working very well. It's sat here busily doing its work on this machine, and it's great. I partly wanted to try and lift my... I didn't want to keep connecting to webmail on my work machine anymore. So I've got a little VM that I wanted to have everything in. And if you've got two different tabs of different mailboxes open in a web browser...
Oh, my God, yes, just forget that.
Memory just chews away.
Exactly.
So a mail client avoids that.
Yes. And that works. Especially if it's a Google product that you're using.
And shock horror, it's not Electron. It doesn't appear
It should not be Electron either. That's the point. It should not be Electron. There's really no reason for it to be Electron.
It's not a bloody Electron thing either, which is even better. And it's open source. It has a good community supporting it. So currently it looks quite interesting. It'll all go wrong, of course. But at the moment, I'm quite pleased with it. It will work for now. And I tried Thunderbird, and Thunderbird's a great big car crash of a thing still.
It is.
So,
yeah. I always had such high hopes for Thunderbird.
If you need a mail client, this works well. For my use case, it works very well. As I said, I've got now a jump box I jump into for personal email and things. It keeps it off my work machine.
Very cool. Yeah, mail client. You would not have expected that in 2026. Like, I mean, you would think that there is no market anymore. Everybody is settled. Like what we just talked about in smartphones. There's still a business to be made.
Next week, Ian's going to bring a fabulous MP3 player for his cool thing.
Oh.
Yeah, or an IRC client.
IRC client. Why not? Why not?
One that collects all your chats from all the different systems into one, right, Ian?
Yeah.
That would be hilarious. My cool thing is I didn't hit send. See, my cool thing is the second season of a TV show I love. It's The Pit. It's basically a Pittsburgh emergency room. It's like a hospital emergency room, and it's kind of in the style of I've picked it last year at some point when they first had the first season, so it's already like we didn't have to wait a full year to get the second season, which is awesome. I think I want to say in the summer somewhere they started showing that last year. It's kind of in the style of 24, where like you basically it's one 13-hour shift, basically, so 13 episodes. Each episode is 1 hour at the emergency room, and you follow a cast of emergency room professionals. It's a teaching hospital, so like you get the attendings and like the adults in the room, but you also get all the like learning students, kind of young doctors. It's a very, very diverse cast. Noah Wiley, which you might know from ER, is basically he's one of the executive producers, but he's also the kind of one of the main characters there. And season one was amazing. It is the most realistic for TV show, medical TV shows you can have. There's literally a whole thing on YouTube and social media if you're still watching that, where people like professionals working in medical like emergency rooms watch this show and then comment on it. And it is still a TV show, and there is still little things that are not exactly because they're still actors, but they do actually have professionals on set. And like something I learned in one of the interviews was like the director will literally step out. And the medical professional steps in and then basically tells them what to do. So like they went through training before, so that everything kind of flows and feels like, and all the like there were people that went on set like professionals. They were like, and they opened drawers and they're like, yeah, this way this would be like stuff like that. It is literally set up in a way that it's a real hospital.
That's
also
really cool.
The set is a closed set. Right, so it's not like three walls and a camera, like it's literally like it's a room, a massive emergency like
four
room,
walls, yeah.
all the walls and everything. It's round-ish. And like they literally just walk around. So it's, as I said, it's fascinating. And what I found really cool is the second season, especially. They dealt in the first season already with some of the problems in the medical field, like overworked staff, effects of COVID, right, on the people, really, of on the professionals that had to go through that, like all the trauma also that simply comes from working in an environment like that, all the issues that the medical system in the US has and all of that, and like how that affects the people working there. And you see that in season two, like Dr. Rabinovich, Mwawali, he looks tired in the second season, like really looks tired. And there's a reason for that. And it's like, it's not that everybody is happy and, oh, cool, there's a new medical mystery and whatever. No, like they're struggling. They're struggling with real world stuff like cyber attacks, like ICE. Was one of the last episodes was ICE being in hospital, kind of in a tame way because they brought it a year ago. So the reality was even worse than what they had thought back then. So stuff like that. So it's really like really you see the toll that this kind of environment also takes, but also the gratifying parts that you get to do. They had a really good scene about like rape and a rape kit and how that works and like how hard that is on the people and stuff like that. And as I said, I've seen professionals talk about it. They're like, yep, that is actually how it is. So good job also. They also little things. They were little mistakes they made that they corrected in season two. Where professionals were like, yeah, that bothered me because that's not how it is. And in season two, they had corrected it. So, good job. Season two, The Pit. If you're squeamish, if you don't like blood, don't watch it. Yeah, it shows everything. It's I also crazy how they did that because like it's like there's an amputated foot and like there's an amputated foot. Like, how did they do that? I mean, for sure, it's fake, but how? Looks real. Or like not amputated, it was ripped off, like that's one of the things you see shows up in a bag. So if you don't like stuff like that, don't watch it. you've been warned. Good. I think then that's it for today. Another show in the can. So I think we should let people know how they can ping us about things or find out more about what we're doing. Ian, let's start with you this time.
Me? Where can you find me? In our Slack room? On Slack? That's one place.
The Slack room on Slack?
Slack? Yeah. I think it's something else I would say. I'm there as TIYBOA. You turn it off and back on again. My handle, I've been on everything internet since the internet was a thing. And then I'm also available on LinkedIn. Look for Ian Grant. I work for Vim Software. Those are the best places to find me.
Very cool.
I'm fairly simple when it comes to social media.
Very good. Very good. And Tom, how about you? Where can people find
people can
you?
Find me.
I was like, who else is here?
You can find me on Mastodon. I am Tom F at sfba.social.
Very cool. And you can find me on the Big Show and the Mac Show every week. So we'll see each other tomorrow again with Jeff. I think he should be back. If not, you're going to have to work with me somehow. Everything I'm doing, including all the cool things, the social media links, the podcast, the projects, and the occasional blog post. And occasionally usually means once every couple of years. But actually this year I've already published the second one because there was one about Starfleet Academy and I have a follow-up kind of in the works. But I posted also about my first solo flight that I took 2 weeks ago almost. And that was a lot of fun. And I posted about that on my blog. So if you haven't, I mean, it's basically what I've written on LinkedIn. But if you're interested, there's a blog post on my website, thepatrice.com. We'll take you there. And then with a certain Jeff Gamet, I do retro rewatch. We rewatch retro TV shows and then talk about it. It's a lot of fun. We're going through Stargate SG-1 with some interruptions in the season breaks. We just started a couple episodes ago with Stargate SG-1. And I think the next one is one of the most fun episodes this season so far, at least. Well, season four, episode six. That is Window of Opportunity. And you will have to watch it to see what the Window of Opportunity was. And it's really a lot of fun, I could tell you that. And that's it. We are also on British Tech Network, is on social media, on the good social media. We're on Mastodon at British Tech Network at techhangout.social, or on Blue Sky at britishtechnetwork.com, and you can still send an email at britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. And I think that's it. Did I forget something? I don't think so. I think that's it. Then tune in again tomorrow for the Mac Show, and then again next week for the Big Show. And everybody, have a great week.